Well, Jamie, the college football landscape is set.
It is.
And not everybody's happy.
Not everybody's playing.
As a matter of fact, Notre Dame is throwing the college football equivalent of laying on the ground and kicking their hands and feet.
Yes.
They are saying that they are not playing in a bowl game because they missed the playoff. And Indiana is the number one team. Nothing makes sense.
It's a topsy-turvy world
anymore in college football. Let's break it down. Dalton Wasserman's the college football and NFL contributor at Pro Football Focus and joins us this morning. Dalton, it's good to have you. We got Dalton there? He's there? There you go. Hey, Dalton, what's up?
Are we good? There we go.
Now yeah, we're good. We got you.
It's good. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Of course. Yeah, it's good to have you. So let's talk about it. The initial reactions to the seeding. Did you think they got it right? You know, BYU, Notre Dame, those teams that didn't make it. What were your initial reactions?
So, honestly, the top eight was just about right the entire time. I don't have any issue with the top eight. The 9 and 10 spots, obviously, are the controversial ones. And I think the end result with it being Alabama and Miami, I actually think it is correct. But the process of getting there was just all over the place. I think, to be honest, the controversy surrounding Notre Dame, to me, was the fact that they were ranked way too high the entire time. Based on their resume, I thought of the four teams in that discussion, they had the weakest resume, and they really did from the beginning. From the initial rankings, they had been ranked number 10, and I thought that was way too high from the start. I thought there was a chance after they lost their first two games that Notre Dame could battle their way back in, but they just didn't have the resume that BYU did, BYU as well, with a couple of ranked wins on their schedule, Alabama and the strength of schedule they had, and splitting two games with Georgia. I know the Oklahoma loss, you know, people look at that as something that's not great at home, obviously, and then the Florida State loss. And then Miami looked and beat them head-to-head, right? And, I mean, all else being equal, and their resumes were pretty equal, all their metrics are pretty equal, they won the game on the field, no matter whether it was week one or week 12 or whatever. So I do think the issues that I have were the process of how we got here and just kind of the winding road that it was of finally flipping Miami with Notre Dame on the last day. And BYU definitely should have been more in the conversation than they were. They were ranked too low the entire time as an 11-1 team with their only loss to Texas Tech.
Well, it seems like you and the athletic director at Notre Dame are saying the same thing, but in different ways. He's saying, like, these rankings prior to this last ranking were an absolute joke and a waste of time, and it got the students' hopes, you know, high that they thought they could overcome anything that needed to happen at the end to get in the playoff.
I completely agree. I do think they have a right to be upset about the optics and the process of it because, to be honest with you, they believe they're one of the 12 best teams in the country, and they may be, and it just didn't shake out their way that they're the first team out here. But I think what you have, again, is just their resume. It was a bit overrated when it came to the beginning of this process. And then from there, after they beat USC, all they had was a solid Pitt win, and Miami beat Pitt by a bigger margin on top of having the head-to-head win. And there just aren't a whole lot of good wins. And I think there's been so much focus in these rankings throughout the process of, well, who did you lose to? Who did you lose to? Well, we have to understand what teams accomplished as well as far as on the winning side. In Notre Dame, they beat USC, who's the top 20 to 25 team. I think they're in the top 20 still to end the rankings. They beat Navy, who's a good team, but they always beat Navy. Boise State's the Mountain West champ, but Notre Dame's expected to beat them. There's really just not a whole lot of good wins when you look at Notre Dame. So they were sliding by on, okay, you played these two really good teams, two teams that are playing each other now, ironically, in the playoff. You played them close, but at the end of the day, to me, you still have to win the ball games. And Notre Dame just didn't have enough quality wins to fit in there, and they were ranked too high. So I actually agree that the process was flawed big time, and they need to fix that part of it.
So is there a perfect process then?
Not if Tulane and, you know, is in there and James Madison.
Yeah, it won't be perfect. And look, James Madison being in there, that's the fault of the ACC, right?
Right.
And just the chaos that happened there with an 8-5 Duke eventually winning the conference and getting into the ACC title game on all sorts of tiebreakers. Would it look not quite as bad if Virginia had won that game and the ACC had that second rep? It might not look as bad, but I think when you look at it, it's really, at the end of the day, it's always going to be a discussion of how good your team is versus what you did and what your resume is and how you actually earned it, right? If you believe that, you know, we think we just look at optically who the two best teams are through certain metrics, it probably was Notre Dame and Miami. If you look at the resumes, you would lean more towards Alabama with their strength of schedule in the SEC, and then splitting hairs to me between BYU and Miami, and then the tiebreaker between those two might be. I do think Miami's a better football team, just barely, than BYU, but it depends on the scope you're looking at it from. And Notre Dame, when it came down to the resume and losing that head-to-head matchup, they just lost out on those two metrics there.
Well, it's an interesting look. It's an exciting time of year, and Michigan's playing in the Citrus Bowl. They're hoping to get some extra reps for certainly a lot of kids on that team and the coaching staff for certain. Dalton Wasserman, appreciate the time. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, no problem. You have a good one.
Thank you so much.
Wild time in college football.
Wild time in college football and in the NFL with what's happening now. So who did you want to win last night between Green Bay and Chicago? It was tough.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it would – I mean, you know, Lions lost to the Packers twice this year, so that's tough. Chicago leads the division, so you'd kind of want them to be knocked down a little bit. Yeah, I don't know how beneficial it was for anybody yesterday.
Well, just from the Lions' perspective, Ryan and I were talking about, well, if Chicago wins, they're running away with the division. If Green Bay wins, that's a problem because Green Bay is a good football team and has beaten the Detroit Lions. So it ended up that the Packers won. Now they lead the division at 9-3-1. Then it's Chicago Bears at 9-4, and then it's the Lions at 8-5. When it comes to
overall, they still have the Bears on the schedule,
right? And when it comes to the overall playoff picture in terms of who's the best in the NFC, I think that having the Bears get knocked down a little was good. The Lions are in the eighth spot now, then the Chicago Bears at 9-4. So, you know, anything can happen. But the Lions have to play the Rams now.
Well, they have to play the Rams, and they still have two divisional games. They still have Chicago and Minnesota to round out the season.
Right.
So those are the ones that you really got to look for. And again, you're hoping, you're maybe banking on Chicago and Green Bay losing another game.
And back to the college football, you know, argument about, well, the head-to-head, that's how the NFL figures things out.
Correct.
At the end of the day. If you've it's played like the each first other, metric. It matters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And look, for the Lions at this point, it's getting in. That's the important part, is getting in. If you can, if you can get in with the situation that they dug themselves in, that's going to be a win. Now, that makes things harder. Because you look at other teams who are on top of the NFC, division winners. I mean, Philadelphia, you know, potentially whoever comes out of the NFC North, you could have a rematch there. So, and you're going to be on the road. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough road. But for them just to get in at this point is going to be a win.
Exactly. Now it's just about getting in. The home field advantage thing.
No, I think you could pretty much throw that out the window. I think that's gone. Also, you know, the 60-minute interview with Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think, is exposing a little more than what people are thinking, because she told Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes, like, oh, we are, you know, you got people in the Republican side of the aisle that are like making fun of Donald Trump. Then he wins the primary and everybody's putting on a MAGA hat. Like, it feels.
But people assume that.
Well, I guess it's one thing to assume it, but then it's another thing to hear a lawmaker say it.
Mm-hmm.
And her coming out saying this is like, what is this then? Like, what are we doing here? And I think over the next year, we're going to get a much clearer picture, because people are going to have to make some hard choices. How much they embrace Donald Trump going into this midterms and how much they want to go on it alone.
Well, I think also there's a macro argument too. Is it okay to dissent and have a different opinion than the president and the administration? It doesn't seem like it.
Usually, yes.
Usually, yes. And there should be some dissent. That makes a strong party, I think. But she dissented on something that she truly believed in, which was the Epstein debacle.
Sure.
And then she gets called a traitor, and now she's quitting.
But here's the other dirty secret, is I think everybody's like this. The whole lot of them. I mean, Joe Biden's out here stumbling and fumbling and falling on stage and talking to a guy in a parachute when they're supposed to take a G7 picture. And everybody's like, ah, no big deal. Like, it's a problem, I think, on all sides here. That everybody is, that nobody wants to just come out and say something because the guy with your letter is in the office.
Yeah, good point.
So I think it's probably more emblematic of politics as a whole instead of just the Republican Party, even though that's in the spotlight now. We have a wonderful tradition coming up. The Say Detroit Radiothon is this week. We'll talk to Mitch Albom about it and the impact that it has here in the city of Detroit next on JR Morning.